From building a business we're talking about to creating best-in-class client experiences, we're here to explore what it takes to make sure you're top of mind and get the referral every time. Join me as I interview some of the most innovative and inspiring business owners in the online space and discover how you can create more opportunities to ensure your clients are thrilled with your work and make you the obvious choice to send their friends to. It's time to stop going it alone and start transforming your star power into staying power. I'm Dusty Arab, and you're listening to Referral Worthy. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Referral Worthy. Today, I am joined by Autumn Witt Boyd, who is a lawyer who owns her own firm, the Autumn Witt Boyd Firm. I am just so thrilled to have you here today, Autumn. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me, Dusty. I'm excited to chat.
So as somebody who does legal for the online business space specifically, first of all, like, God love you. Second, how did you get into this? Like, that's such an interesting career path. And I feel like you've been in this for a decent amount of time at this point.
Almost 9 years. Yeah, it's wild.
9 years. That's amazing. So tell me how you got started as a lawyer and then how you ended up making that transition.
Yeah, so I was a theater kid. So I always have been interested in arts and music. So I had dreams of being a copyright lawyer. So I went to law school in Nashville at Vanderbilt, you know, wanted to be maybe like a music lawyer. I tested that out. I did some summer clerkships, and it turns out that a lot of entertainment law is very boring. It's just like reviewing contracts and negotiating deals. And so, you know, to my 22-year-old self, that seemed very boring. So all the like sexy, exciting stuff was happening in litigation. So like being going to the courtroom, you know, the flashy, you know, exciting. And so being a theater kid, I'm very comfortable being in front of crowds and public speaking. So I pursued that path instead, but I always was still interested in copyright and trademark and kind of the intellectual property side of the law. So I worked for a judge. That's what brought me to where I live now in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is not a music city, not an entertainment capital at all. But I came here for a 2-year job with the judge and just kind of fell in love with the town and decided to stay. So I worked at a couple different, like, very normal, boring law firms. I did commercial litigation, which is basically helping old white men get richer. But I always had still that bug of wanting to do copyright law. And I just got lucky. I think a lot of career stories are like this. Like, it's kind of a combination of determination and luck. So I got lucky. We had a case that came into the law firm where I was working. And the only reason I was assigned to it is because it was in front of the judge that I had formerly worked with. It was a copyright case. It involved the infringement of a painting. And so that allowed me to do kind of all the things that I was really interested in and had started to become good at. Long story short, I was hired by the firm that was working on that case. And they did just copyright litigation, mostly for photographers. So it was all visual art. And it was really a dream job. I worked there almost 8 years. I learned a ton. It was a ton of travel because we were litigating all over the country, and it was very high pressure, high stress, quick deadlines, working till midnight or 2 a.m. a lot. In there, I had twins who are now 12. And so what seemed like very glamorous and fun in the beginning became much less so as I had two little people and a husband and a house to run and all those things. So I hit burnout. We took a case to trial. Most of our cases had settled, but it was in Philadelphia. So I was gone for almost a whole month. I came back and forth a little bit, but that was just really rough on the whole family. So decided to do something different. Looked around, did not see anything that looked interesting. It kind of gotten spoiled because I was working from home in that job, which is at that time was unheard of in law.
Right.
So I was like, I don't want to go back to a desk. I don't want to, you know, be chained to a law firm again. So I decided to start my own thing. And that was 2015. And just like fell into the online space. Like, that was not a grand plan. I didn't even know this existed. I didn't know anything about coaches or courses or anything.
God, that is so fascinating. Because you're right. Like, I love what you said about it being like determination and luck. Because like, you were not going to fail. You're just not the kind of person who I think like has it in them to fail for very long at something like this once you pick it. And I mean, as a fellow theater kid, like, I get it. Like, when you find your thing and it just like, okay, like, if I ain't going to be on stage, this is what I'm going to fucking do.
Yes.
I love everything about it. So that first client, I mean, I have another friend who is opening a firm now, kind of, you know, mid-career. He's like 45 and he's getting ready to start that. So I'm having this conversation right now with him as well, actually, like how he's branching out and how he's like starting to set things up. So like, how did you get that first client though in the online space?
Well, so I'm kind of a hustler. I don't do anything halfway.
Kind of a hustler?
I don't do anything halfway, as you mentioned. I'm a very hard worker. So I like taught myself marketing and sales. Like, I didn't have any background in any of that, but I was listening to tons of podcasts. I read, I should go find what this book was. I got it from the library. And it basically described a sales funnel, but it was like more geared towards consultants. And so it's not called a sales funnel, but it was basically like you write a book or you have a brochure and then you sell them something small. Anyway, so I had this whole marketing plan when I started my firm, which was mostly just personal connection. So I love that your podcast is called Referral Worthy, because that's still to this day, like we're over $1 million annual revenue. And that's still how we get most of our clients is referrals. So I like sent a mailer to everyone whose address I could find from like law school, my local connections, just like, I am open for business and here are the things that I do. Like, I would love for you to help me spread the word. And then I set myself a goal to have 5 coffees or lunches every week when I
That's my favorite thing. And I literally would just email.
I don't do this anymore, but like I joined the local chamber of commerce and like I would go to meetings, just be like, hi, I'm Autumn. I'm a lawyer. And just like tell people what I do. And I got clients that way. My very first client I found because another lawyer had gotten my mailer, like who I kind of knew a little bit. I knew his wife better than him, but he got a referral and it was something he didn't do. And so he's like, and it was a copyright case. It was like literally the exact thing that Magic. I had been doing. I know. It was a wonderful first thing to happen because I was, you know, I'd always worked under other lawyers. I'd never made decisions on my own, but it was something I could do in my sleep. So it was very easy to be like, okay, this is all me, but like, I know I can do this. So yeah,
I mean, again, like so exciting.
Kismet, like whatever, you put things out to the universe, but also I worked really hard. So, you know, it's like a snowball. It continued to grow from there.
Totally. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it did not take you very long to, as far as I'm concerned, like you are the lawyer in the online space for like this little corner of the internet. And your clientele reflects that. I mean, you have clientele that people on this podcast have absolutely heard of, amongst them, Amy Porterfield. So how did that happen? Was that really just like you happened to like a friend of a friend? Like, was it like that greater referral network?
100%. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll tell you the Amy Porterfield story because it's like an example of what has happened a number of times. I have a dear friend named Corinne Crabtree, who you may have heard of.
Yeah.
She runs a big weight loss coaching business. And then she's also now doing business coaching. And she and I had been friends since like 2007 because I was a member of her weight loss community. I found her through Weight Watchers a million years ago.
That's
and we had just been
awesome.
Friends. I know we've been friends. And she had what she would call like a hobby business for a long time. But because she lives just down the road from me, we became like IRL friends. And around 2014, when I decided to leave my last job and start my own firm, she went through life coach training and like really decided to up-level her business. And she is like dogged. Like, you think I'm a hard worker. She is an incredible hard worker. So she was like in Todd Herman's mastermind and like taking a course with Stu. And like, she was all over the place. And she went up to Amy Porterfield at a conference and was like, I just want to tell you, like, I took Digital Course Academy and it's changed my business. Like, then she and Amy developed a friendship. And so Corinne ended up introducing me to Amy. Long story, but there were a couple more steps, but yeah.
God, I'm so grateful you shared that story because that is exactly how I've grown my business 100% of the way too. Like, it's so easy for people to see these people who are just like killing it and from their perspective and being like, oh God, how could I ever get a client like that? And it really just comes down to like doing good work and being a decent person.
And asking, like I asked Corinne to make the connection and I've asked other people to make connections who have told me no. And that's fine. Like I always ask in a way that I'm like, look, if this doesn't feel great to you, like no worries.
Right.
Some people have told me like, I'm only like tangentially connected to that person. I really can't make that introduction. It's like, great, no worries. It will come around if it's meant to come around. But yeah, like I hosted a whole dinner in San Diego basically so that I could have an excuse to invite Amy Porterfield to something. And then I like set myself in front of her so that we could chat. And so, I mean, it was like very intentional, but not gross.
But not gross.
Yeah.
That's badass is what that is. Like, I mean, you're like, I know exactly what I want. This is how I'm going to like create this opportunity for myself. And I also get to do this fucking awesome thing, even if I don't get the answer I want. That's incredible. That's incredible to me.
And, you know, we started with something really small and I didn't pitch Amy Porterfield. Like I was just trying to kind of get in front of her, honestly.
Right.
But I remember she asked me, Corinne had kind of told her a little bit about me and she was like, so tell me like, who is your ideal client? And I just looked at her and I said, Amy Porterfield. And she was like, oh,
that's so good.
Changed the conversation a little bit.
I feel like that also goes to show how important it is to know exactly who your ideal client is and for it not to be some customer avatar exercise that you did one time in a business course. Like, knowing exactly who you want to fucking work with specifically like that makes such a massive difference. And then you know at least kind of what you need to do to get there. Like, you have to start building this in between
relationships. If you don't have a target, you can't. Like, how are you going to get there? I'll tell you something else I did early on. I don't know if you remember the Being Boss podcast, the Emily Being Thompson Boss. And Kathleen Channon. Yeah. So that was another like kismet that I won't go into. I could tell stories all day long. But she would talk about having a hot shit list. She called it her hot shit 100 back when she was doing like individual one-on-one services. And I have a hot shit list that has like my dreamiest dream clients that I'm like, I cannot imagine. And like this year, several of them have been served up to me on a plate by other connectors. And it's like, it's still exciting. Like, it never is not exciting.
Right. To be recommended by people who you love and care about and love working with, and to continue to be able to open those doors like that. That's the dream as a small business owner.
Well, we do the same. I think that's really important to mention too. Like, I keep an incredibly robust referral. We call it our refer out list so that I can keep my ears open. I mean, it's not always reciprocal to the same person, but I do feel like what goes around comes around. So we refer out a ton of work that we're very narrowly focused. So we refer out a lot that's not good for us. And then just if a client said like, oh, I need a copywriter, or I need a CFO or whatever, like we try and connect people to people, like you said, who are doing good work that we know will take care of them.
Right. That's incredible. And that's so interesting you put that way, because like, you guys are a legal business. You're a law firm. However, you do have these roots in the online marketing community. So you have all these other connections. And I mean, and that's how we met.
Yeah.
Very cool. So what are you most excited about in your business right now?
Actually, it's funny. It's like all intertwined. So last year, I had a goal to really systematize our referral marketing, because it has all been like kind of dependent on Autumn and where she goes and who she meets and that kind of stuff. So we've been working on it for almost a whole year, because I was like, I don't want to put efforts and money and time into this thing, sending gifts, putting on joint webinars, like that kind of stuff to build relationships. But I don't want to do it if I can't track the ROI.
Right.
So we had to first build a tracking system of like, I want to know who are my top 10 referral sources and when was the last time I talked to them? Like, just so I can make sure, and again, not in a gross way, but just like make sure that I am not letting those relationships kind of die on the vine. So it's like, well, how do we track that? So we finally got that built. And now we're actually like starting the plan of, we've started a newsletter just for our connectors, and we're going to start like having some fun events and activities. And so I'm really, really excited about that.
I would love hearing as much about that program as you're comfortable sharing, to be honest. Like,
well, it's new. I almost grabbed before I sat down. I have a favorite book that is called something like How to Get Referrals Without Asking. Stacey Brown Randall is the author, and she's a good podcast if you like geeking out about this kind of stuff. So we kind of loosely, and she has a program and stuff that we haven't done, but we kind of loosely follow her idea, which is like, if you stay top of mind, if you do good work, you will not have to say like, can you introduce me to three friends, which feels awful. So Allison, who works with me and she is my assistant plus so many other things, but she and I sat down and came up with a plan, a year-long plan. And so it's like every quarter, and I'm going to botch it because I don't have it in front of me, but it's something like the first month, we'll send out a newsletter. The second month, we'll like kind of evaluate who we've talked to recently and who needs outreach, and we'll figure that out. And the third month, we'll do some sort of event. So whether that's like a dinner or a cocktail hour or like a joint webinar, something like that to like get us in front of new people. And then it's kind of like rinse and repeat. And then we'll do some other, like we send a New Year's card. That's kind of part of this plan. Like, that's a touch point. We set out like Christmas gifts to some of our top clients. Like, that's part of the touch point plan.
That's fantastic. So it's online, it's physical, it's making sure that like, you don't have to think so hard about it. So
yes. Like, I don't have to, like, literally right now, I don't know if you're seeing this, but like our pipeline, we're recording this in April. Our pipeline is dry. We have not done anything different. I don't know what it is. So I see that and I'm like, oh, I got to go beat the bushes.
Right.
I would like to have to not beat the bushes. Like, I would like for it just to be kind of a steady drumbeat rather than me having to go like, oh, I need to get in front of some new people.
Right. Let me go do a podcast sprint. Let me do all the things that we do when business slows down. Yeah. And just
I have 20 coffee chats in the next month. I'm just trying to meet new people. And none of that's bad, but I would just like to not have to feel like I'm behind the eight ball a little bit.
Right. Well, and as somebody who's the face of their business, the way that you are, you're exactly the type of client that I work with, in that, like, when you're the face of your business and it's a $1 million plus business, when money isn't coming in, you know, the thing you have to go do is get your face out in front of people because it always does the thing. And that gets exhausting. It just does. I mean, so I have so much admiration and respect for you guys building out this really like meaty plan to like take care of your people. That's amazing. Yes.
That really is the goal. Like what you said, it's not to like be asking for things all the time. It really is to be helpful and a resource and remind them we exist. Because whenever we remind people we exist, connections happen. Like it just is that simple.
Well, and so that everybody is clear here, if you go to my resources page right now, you can actually, Autumn is one of the only people on there. So in addition to you offering like legal services, you also do templates.
We sure do.
Okay. Tell me more about that and what the thought process was behind that.
So when I first started working with online businesses, I found them all through like Facebook groups for podcasts that I was listening to. And a lot of them needed the same thing. So it was literally like, if I did the same project three times, I had thought about, because you know, you hear about passive income. I had thought like, oh, it'd be nice to have a product side to the service business. It's not as easy as they say. But I started the templates really early for that reason. Like I want to start building kind of a deck or, you know, something that I can, and it's so easy to sell digital products. So I started out, it was just the templates that I was creating for my clients. I worked with a lot of creatives in the beginning, so like copywriters, designers. And so I just threw all the lessons that I learned from talking with them and hearing what the problems were with their clients. I built a really robust template. And so I was like, well, let's just sell this. It's not that hard to take kind of the form that we use internally and turn it into a template. And then it's just grown. We've got over 30 templates now, 9 years later, and they're all created by lawyers in our firm. They're all updated. If we see something change or if we notice an issue, we'll go update them and we'll send a little love note to anyone who's bought it in the past. If there's a major update, like, hey, we updated it. Go grab a new copy with the new language. And as we've up-leveled the firm, we now are working with more Amy Porterfields. So it's expensive to hire us to work on a contract. So
right.
Being able to offer something that's really affordable, they're $2.99 and we've got a coupon code almost all the time that you can probably find that makes it more affordable and we run sales. So to be able to have a resource to that, you know, business owner at 50K or 100K, that really the ROI on hiring us to write a contract, you're just not going to see. Right. But I do think it's really important. Contracts are the legal foundation of almost every business. So it's kind of twofold.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is one of the things that, I mean, I feel like I just hammer into folks, like if they're in their first year or two of business, like you do not work outside of a fucking contract. Like you Correct. Just absolutely do not.
You don't start until it's signed.
Yep. They pay the invoice and they sign the contract. That is just That's how right. it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also become an internal resource, you know, for our attorneys. Like if I've got to draft something, it's almost always we have a template. So we use that as our starting point.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Internal operations and an external product. That, I mean,
what could be better?
That's kind of what I'm working on, like on the back end right now. Like we can talk about that later. But
yes.
Oh man. Okay. So switching gears a little bit, because you have such a good eye on these trends. So for anybody who is curious, Autumn does go live and talks about different like legal issues that are coming up in the space very frequently, particularly on Instagram. So definitely give her a follow over there and go watch this stuff because I watch all of them because I think it's so interesting. So I'm not even joking because you see things that I don't because I'm not a lawyer. So when you're looking at the space right now, what are the big like red flag issues you see coming up as of 2024?
Yes. So things no one is talking about. Oh, and I'll mention, if you are looking for me on Instagram, it's AWB Firm. That's our handle everywhere. I do have a personal account, but it's just like pictures of my kids and it's private. So don't try to follow that one. You won't find anything interesting. So two things I'll mention. One is if you have a team, who's an employee and who's a contractor and whether you have people classified the right way, the laws are different in every state. So if you Google an article and it says like, if they're this, you do that, like there is no blanket answer. So I would say for a newer business, this is a lower risk area for you. But as you are scaling, for sure, you get to a couple hundred thousand or a million. That is something you need to be paying attention to because here's how it goes wrong. You have someone leave you, either you fire them or they leave disgruntled. And then they maybe file an unemployment claim, but they were a contractor. So contractors don't get unemployment. Now you have, you know, maybe some eyes on you from a state. They're like, that's weird. You say they're a contractor. They say they're an employee. Like, so you can get an audit, which is painful and expensive. So that's not great. Or they can report you, the employee. If someone is disgruntled, they can say, you know, I should have gotten overtime, right? You know, I'm owed back pay or
Right.
Any of those things. So paying attention to that as you grow, I will often say you can DIY things like contracts 100%. Employment law is not a DIY area. Like that is
honestly.
Yes. No one talks about also like the expense and the compliance of having team members in lots of states. It is incredibly expensive and there's a lot of compliance. So as you're getting started, if you can hire people near you or in a handful of states, that will keep your legal costs down for sure.
Right. And like I heard, I think that last year or the year before, like California's laws changed drastically. And I know like lots of people, that was something that they were struggling with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very hard to classify a worker as a contractor in California because California is very pro worker and they want them to have all the benefits of, you know, being an employee.
Totally. So, which is just also challenging as a small business owner.
Very expensive. Yes. The other thing that we are seeing kind of come down the pipe is the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, is responsible for basically making sure that everyone is, their advertisements are truthful, that they're not advertising things like bait and switch or like, you know, these scammy, you know, you'll make $1 million in 3 weeks business claims. So for the long time, they were really only focusing on big fish. But I have started to see in the last year or so, they're going after much smaller businesses. Now I say smaller, like multi-million, but not like 20 or 100 million, which is kind of where they had focused, but they're going after smaller businesses. And I think I think that's right. I don't mind it. But I think it's because there was such an explosion of online business during and after the pandemic, and a lot of people are being scammed. So I think they're trying to make some examples. So that's another one like that is pretty easy to comply with. Like, just don't lie.
Right. Don't lie. Don't be a dick.
Advertising. Like, but there are some specific rules around like money back guarantees and some other, like if you're using testimonials, there is some trickiness there. So again, not a huge worry if you're early in your business, but something to keep in mind as you're scaling, you're more likely to become on their radar.
Right. Oh, God. That's so exciting to me. I'm like, oh, get him.
Bring him down. I know.
It clears the space for the rest of us who are like that's doing like legitimate work. It makes me
trying
so happy.
Do the right thing. Yes.
Yep. Amazing. Okay. So final question. I ask this to everybody who comes on Referral Worthy. For you, what makes somebody a referral worthy business?
Two things. One, it is very clear what they do and who they do it for. So I know like who to keep them in mind for, or like if I'm talking with someone and they say, I need help with a book launch. I'm like, XYZ person is great for that rather than just like, I do marketing. If you're a generalist, it's really hard to refer you. So like having a clear, and I know like, oh, you're great for a $10 million business, but not for like a $500,000, like kind of knowing the range of offers and services, all that. And number two, like, I know you're going to do good work. Either I have had experience with you or I've talked with your clients or I have some like more than just like passing acquaintance with how you take care of your people. Like if I hear, and this has happened, like people have gone off of our refer out list. If I hear, oh, they were a nightmare or like, oh, I can never get them to call me back or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, nope. Because then that makes me look bad. And that is the goal. The whole referral thing is like my goal. If someone sends me a referral is I want the person who sent them to me to look good. So even if I can't help them, I make sure I connect them or I send them a resource or I find another referral for them. Like I never want it to just be like, nope, sorry.
So good. So good.
Yeah.
Autumn, thank you so much for joining me for today. For everybody who wants to connect with you, where's the best place they can find you?
So our website has the templates and all the other information. I have a podcast that is not being published anymore, but is still live. The Legal Roadmap podcast has tons of good information. And if you're looking for the Q&A sessions that Dusty mentioned, those are on Instagram and Facebook. AWB Firm is where you can find all of that. If you join our email list, then you can send your own question in and I will answer it live, whether you can join or not. So that's all at awbfirm.com.
Amazing. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Is your business referral worthy? Take the quiz at thereinvention.co/quiz to find out and get specific, actionable tips to take your business from best kept secret to book solid. Thanks for listening to Referral Worthy. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.